The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
Thank you for connecting with the Radio Today programme with Audioboo. I'm Trevor Dan. We've got another stellar panel to discuss various issues today. Phil Critchlow is with us. He's the founder of TBI Media. If you come from Nottingham, you probably think that TBI is the Trent Bridge Inn. But actually, it's not... for you, is it, Phil? What's TBI?
TBI is the big idea.
The big idea.
The big idea.
Award-winning independent production company. We'll talk about your success in a tick. And Mark Goodyear is here, not to be a DJ, but to be the founder of another of the top independent production companies in the UK, Wise Buddha, the Wise Buddha Group, no less.
Yeah, we have a couple of companies. We have a company that does content production and talent management, and we have a music and jingle company.
We'll talk about all of those things, if we may, in a tick. Full disclosure before we get going. This week, Phil and Mark and I are all on the board of the Radio Independence Group, but I'm sure all sectors of the radio industry would want to congratulate both of you on winning lots of awards at the New York Festival, and you particularly, Phil, Indie of the Year. How did that happen? Well done.
I've no idea how that happened. It's nice that it did.
Is it something you had to enter?
No, it isn't. Actually, on this occasion, we put our stuff in, and they came back and actually quietly a week out said, you know, we'd like to do this. We don't do it every year. And what do you think? And I said, delighted, absolutely delighted. And that was it, really.
And what were the individual shows that were commended?
I mean, in total, we got 10. Titanic Minute by Minute, which we did for Radio 2 last May, was particularly noticed, which I was delighted about because that was a real labour of love.
Extraordinary to think of this being played despite everything that is going on around the passengers. So it's 14 minutes past one. As stewardess Annie Martin gets into lifeboat 11, she can see the band playing.
The men were sitting on the companionway on the A deck forward with life belts by their sides. They were making no attempts to put their belts on. Many of them were smoking. Others were beating time to the music with their feet. Even then, they thought they were safe. Everybody thought everybody would be saved.
So there's Titanic Minute by Minute. How did that work?
Well, we wrote a long script, 120 pages. We had a fantastic team working on it, Jonathan Mayo helping me with the production. We built it around 8 string players who effectively replicated the string players on the boat. And we went on air live at 20 to midnight on the date, exactly 100 years on, which is ship's clock time. And we told the story in real time, in the present tense, using the string players' stories as the narrative. And obviously the strings then played throughout, so they did an underscore as well as a featured song. And it was very emotional, and it was very hard to do, but it was in a sense, I kind of regard it as very good old-fashioned radio.
It was a brilliant thing. Did you hear it, Mark?
Yes, fantastic. And I should congratulate Phil, because it's not just the sort of depth, but it's the range of work that he's done. Indie of the Year was quite an achievement.
Mention some other shows.
Well, we had a gold and a silver for 12 Hours to Please Me, which was the remake of the Beatles' first album that we did at Abbey Road in February this year, where we were live on Radio 2 throughout the day remaking those songs again in real time. They made the album in a day, remarkably. And then we made a programme from BBC 4 that was broadcast on the Friday, which basically filmed the whole day and summarised it. We then got a gold for Beach Boys at 50, which was a documentary series for Radio 2, and we are really pleased to ask you about the Islam Without God, which was a programme we made at Rosby Short Notice for Radio 4 with Abdulrahman Malik, who's a fantastic presenter, and it really showed that actually if a team pulled together in 3 or 4 weeks you can pull together something, which I was really proud of. And then again on Radio 3, a programme called Belongings, which was written and produced by Jonathan Mayo, looking at people who are considering how to downsize and what you keep and what you don't keep, and it was just a montage of interviews and sound.
So you make programmes, don't you, for Radio 1, you've just mentioned Radio 2, Radio 3, Radio 4. To be a modern independent producer, you've got to work across at least all those networks, haven't you?
Yeah, and 5 Live in our case as well. You know, in the cricket that we do on 5 Live, got a silver at the Sony's this year. So I think absolutely, if you're aiming to have the kind of scale that means you can have a team in place who will bounce ideas off each other, who will bring that kind of creative mix of a variety of different areas of expertise and experience, then you need, in my experience, you do need a good broad cross-section of programmes.
Just give us an idea of scale then. How many people have you got working for you now?
Full-time, five, but there are probably around about 20 very regular freelancers who work with us. And that just seems to be the way that people want to work now. When I was involved in Unique way back prior to this, we had a much bigger in-house staff, but I think things have changed a little bit. And we have people who work anything from 4 days regularly every week because that's the way they want to work, and I'm fine with that, to people who do a day a week or a programme a week, or it just depends. But then we have a core team who look after all the very regular output and the administration of five.
Mark, mention a couple of the award winners that you had in New York.
We, in our jingle company, got a couple of golds. We got Best Sound and Best Programme ID. Our jingle and imaging business is, it's actually very, I suppose when you think of Wise Buddha, you think about a company that's been making radio programmes for years, but our jingle and imaging business is very successful in this country. We did the Radio 2 package, which was core to these submissions, but we're on national stations in many major markets around the world, and so that was particularly gratifying. And we also won a Sony Gold for the work we did for Radio 2. I was also proud of a drama that we did for teenagers for Radio 1 called Gaslight, which was all about that experience of going to university for the first time. And although it was directed at teenagers, and although I only did one term of university at Napier College doing applied physics with electronics before I got into radio, it really took me back to that sort of experience of being really a kid still. And it was told from the viewpoint of four teenagers. It was very rare to have drama on Radio 1. And I was just very glad that it got a nod.
On the couple of kind of broader issues then, you've talked almost exclusively about programmes that you've both made for the BBC, notwithstanding the jingles, which obviously kind of broader market. But should we have, do you think, in the UK, a bigger market from commercial radio? Can you see a time when they'll embrace independent production a bit more than they do, Mark?
I think there was a time when they did, but I do think currently almost all of commercial radio is prioritising programming rather than programmes. And a lot of them with the networking are, if they're doing any programmes, it's going to be at breakfast and drive. And I think apart from that, it's about consolidation, not just of companies, but also of output. For indies to win and get business out of the current British commercial sector, we're going to have to innovate and come up with something they hadn't thought of and persuade them that there's not only an audience value, but a cash value to doing that business. And we're working on some of those things. And there are some things which I can't reveal now, but probably by the next time we talk, may have come and gone or come and stayed, depending on how successful they are. But it's not ever going to be a situation where a PD in a commercial network will make a decision to take a programme that plays 52 weeks a year like the Beeb do.
So they're not likely to buy a programme from you, but you might get it funded by somebody
else. Or we might come up with an idea and they like it so much they'll work with us. I mean, I just remember talking to Tim Schoonmaker before I worked for Bauer in the early 2000s, and he said, "Mark, the problem with you BBC guys is you're all about your intricate flower borders. I'm just going to keep mowing the grass." And that has stuck with me, because actually in commercial radio there's a lot of that kind of, you know, turn on the tap, it's always the same. But there are also some brilliant programmers who work within that, and there's some great air talent within that, and I think our job is to give them ideas that they didn't have and dare them to not use them.
Phil?
I think the perspective that you get from existing outside of a given radio station or a given brand or a given group, genuine, I would say this, wouldn't I? But I do actually believe it quite passionately. It's great. I mean, in my past, I looked after the Pepsi chart for 10 years. And what we did with that show, I'm still incredibly proud of. And I don't mean we as in Unique, as it was in those days. I mean we as 120 radio stations who actually took on the BBC at that point and did a very good job collectively of making it work. So I think there are two things here. Firstly, a perspective from outside a radio station can give new thought and direction when you're so close to something that you don't get. The second thing is, I think that commercial radio working as a collective could be more powerful than working individually. And I think if we can help commercial radio see that through some really good ideas properly funded, and let's not forget commercial radio is not a charity. It's not charity radio, it's commercial radio. And for that reason, we need to come up with ideas that you know, will become properly funded, will excite sponsors and people who want to fund it as much as the audience. But if we can do that, I think we can bring value. And I do think there are beginning to be some green shoots where that's concerned. We had a new series that launched last week, which is fully funded on Absolute, a comedy series. And, you know, like Mark, we've got lots of other ideas that we're considering as well.
As I mentioned earlier, we're all three of us members of the Radio Independence Group. Do you think in a few years' time we'll look back at that and think, how quaint? How can we possibly think of ourselves as a radio organisation. Are we not all multimedia, multi-platform producers now?
We think like that, don't we? But, you know, I don't think we should at this point play down the death of radio as a medium. And I think, you know, my children don't listen to the radio much, apart from the youngest one, but they consume all sorts of media. And if we get good at pushing our content through whatever pipe it is that they lands on their screen or in their ears, I'm sure that there's work for us. We might be the multimedia production group. In a sense, you quite rightly say we still are. We already are.
Because you do a bit of telly, don't you?
Yeah, and you know, I'm not naive. You know, we do events, we do TV, we come up with solutions for branding within some fairly large commercial brands. But I do happen to believe that going back to something like Titanic, that wouldn't have been the same on TV. And I don't think actually in the way that we treated that particular, we built that to be right for people to listen to. And the relationship you have with an audience, at the risk of stating the obvious, when you're one-to-one with them across a microphone, is a very different one from the relationship you have when you're pointing cameras at people. Both equally have merit, but it would be a shame, as Mark says, to lose sight of the fact that actually radio, as radio, is pretty good.
It's really important to say that the listening online and all of the other things you can listen to, it's a very small percentage still compared to the millions of people who listen to radio every week. It will change and it will grow, but radio gives you, and certainly the way that the BBC does it currently on their national networks, it gives you something that you can take the pleasure of discovery from, as opposed to something you seek out and you already know what you're looking for. You know, I just listened to a couple of our New York things and I heard a Walker interview, a clip of it in the submission with Art Garfunkel. Walker is just an extraordinary broadcaster in that it's like a masterclass in setting up a question. And he reminded Art Garfunkel that he'd once said, "We need three of us in Simon & Garfunkel. That's me and Paul and the psychiatrist," which Garfunkel remembered the quote. And then Sir Johnny said, "So if you'd had the psychiatrist, which one of you would he have needed to spend more time with?" Which is a fantastic question. You don't come across a place where you get questions like that asked by somebody like Johnny Walker if you just go to Spotify and choose a playlist.
One thing I wanted to ask both of you is, I mean, there will be people listening to this who are students. There'll be people studying radio, people who want to get a job in our industry. And what they often say to me is that the advice we're always given is go to your local station, make the tea, all that kind of stuff we were told 20, 30 years ago. And they say, well, we go along and they say, actually, we're not here apart from 3 hours at breakfast time. We don't want you to make any tea. And I say, well, you should talk to independent producers because they're the people who want your ideas and they can help you push them, possibly to commercial radio, but certainly to all the BBC channels. Mark, do you think that's the right advice to give young people?
I think that finding the right person who will welcome you is a sensible bit of advice. All I could say is that a great number of people who've been very successful in our business and then gone on to work in other businesses since leaving Wise Buddha started as runners or people who hung around the studios looking after clients or as doing an internship or 4 weeks as a researcher in the content department. You've just got to find a way to let somebody see that you've got more than the average, you know, Joe, really. And I think we welcome those people. All the time I get people saying, can they come and do an internship?
And you don't mind getting a letter from somebody who's a student looking for an internship?
And they're almost always emails, and I just put them on to the right person and I make a recommendation based on what I think. And then, you know, within the departments, they will encourage people. And I think that's one of the great things about the way the indie sector is positioned. And that is that we have to get the new ideas. We're not constrained by the fact that we have 24/7 output to fill. We're project based, although a lot of us do have regular output, and it means that we're always looking for something new, as opposed to being satisfied with what we've got. In other words, we don't feed the machine and know that if we do that job, we can go home. We're constantly thinking about what could we do with that? And if there's a bright young thing who comes in and shows us, many of them get jobs.
Now, the same for you, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, we have a full-time intern programme now. I mean, it's something which I really aspire to do, and only really since we've had the new office space that we've got in a location that works for everybody, we've been able to do it. But we always have an intern in. They're planned up to 12 months in advance. We get a lot of people wanting to do it. And two of our current people who are now working full-time for TBI started on our intern programme. Now, the people who tend to get noticed are people who do something a bit different. So it doesn't, it, I mean, CV is fantastic, but it tends to be an audio clip. I can't resist opening an MP3. If someone, I'm going to get loads of MP3s now, but if someone attaches a short, and I stress short, but powerful MP3 to an email, and it would have to be short to be attached to an email, then that's great, because that shows you're thinking in more than just, I am this, you know, you're actually going to show some work. So thinking about doing something a little bit different to make you just stick out, like everything, just stick out above the pile, I think is a really important part of getting that gig.
We don't just look for people who might want to do radio, though. We want people who like doing web design or audio editing or video editing. You know, I think that this sector, if it grows right, we'll have opportunities for all of those people.
There was a great quote from, I think, when John Burt first took over the BBC, he emerged and said about certain parts of the BBC that they were perhaps tainted by experience. And there's no doubt I feel very tainted by experience on occasions. And the moments that you get from people who come fresh to your company, to your industry, are incredibly powerful and really valuable.
It's the Radio Today programme. We're at Wise Buddha in London West One. Fabulous studios. And Mark Goodyear is here, so is Phil Critchlow. After a message from our sponsor, Roy Martin will be here with this week's news.
The Radio Today programme.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audioboo, sharing voices with the world.
Thank you, Trevor, and Phil and Mark as well. We'll be back with them very shortly. It's been a quiet week for radio news so far, the big story being from the tail end of last week when we heard the date for Global Radio's tribunal case against the Competition Commission will be held on July the 3rd, the same day as the Arquivas, and the big celebration of 40 years of commercial radio as well. Don't expect any answers on the day, though, as these things can take up to 9 months to be resolved. Hopefully, we'll get some results this side of Christmas. But then again, we said that last year. Now Digital wants to extend its DAB multiplex in Cardiff to the heads of the South Wales Valleys, attempting to replace the hole left by the upcoming closure of the MXR regional multiplex on the 29th of July. It's Ofcom's policy to allow these kind of changes, so expect a big green tick over that one anytime soon. BBC WM presenter Carl Chin has taken his departure. On the chin. He's written a public blog, a very polite one, explaining why he's leaving the station, and you can hear all about his last show in this week's edition of E-Radio. Just look for the Listened In section with John Ryan. And next week we'll be at the Arquivas, so no news roundup from me, but lots of interviews, comments and discussion from winners and nominees, and we'll be available a little bit later in the week after the Arquivas takes place on Wednesday night, so look out for the podcast on Thursday or Friday, depending on how drunk we all get. That's the latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme.
Thanks very much, Roy. I'm Trevor Dan. Here is Mark Goodyear and Phil Critchlow. We're doing this week's Radio Today programme. Mark, I'm bound to ask you, you're not doing much on the air anymore.
No, I took a break.
Forced or
no, not
chosen?
Forced. No, I've been doing this a very long time. So February 1980, I started, and I was coming up to Christmas last year, and Global had bought Real and Smooth. And I was coming up to the end of a second 3-year contract, and I'd been doing that show for almost 6, and I thought, do I want to carry on doing this show? And it was great to do, and I love doing it, and I love the people, and I did really enjoy the audience as well and their feedback. And then I weighed it against what I've got going on at Buddha, which is, particularly in our jingle business, it's a global opportunity. And I thought, I can either spend the next few years doing a daily show and let somebody else take responsibility for that global opportunity, or I can get back in there and work it. And so I'm being very honest, it came down to a value. The value is, do I take that money now from being paid to do a radio show, or do I invest some time into something that could be far
bigger?
Were
you doing it live?
Yeah.
Because there's so much presentation now, particularly on commercial radio, that's voice tracked. You've done that kind of work as well, I think, haven't
you? Yeah, look,
what's the difference for you as a DJ? As
it's really very simple. One can voice track, but you can only do it if you prep. And so you've got to do the same amount of prep for a voice track show as you do for a live show. Otherwise, what happens is you don't have the 3 minutes of the record to think of your next link.
They don't pay you, though, do they, for that amount of thinking?
But the point is, that's why that pure voice tracked output sounds very different. But if we ever voice tracked anything when I was doing a daily show, like an hour to do an interview, that would just be like an hour of the show because we would have done the prep. It wasn't some kind of, you know, ridiculous, can I get away early? Although John Simons might have something to say about that. But, I think daytime radio should be a live experience. If you can't either afford to pay a presenter to engage the audience, you just got to remember that everybody's got the records. So what are you going to do that's different? And actually, just to finish my answer to that question, 6 months off the air, completely never done a show, and I'm not missing it. It's weird.
I've just been doing some interviews with people who've been elected to this role of honour of commercial radio, the top 40 people. And I have to say, without giving too much away, and certainly not mentioning any of the people who are in it, the overall feeling is one of sort of disappointment that it's not like it was in the glory days. And of course you'd expect that because they're all people, you know, most as old as me. But there is a real sense of disappointment that there's not enough live presentation of radio. And, you know, you built a career doing that. I wonder if, you know, what your perspective is on that story.
Well, I recognise what you're saying to be really true because I started in at Forth in 1980 and worked around Scottish radio and then to Metro before Radio 1. And Metro and Tees did network at night, but most radio was live most of the day with distinct programming for each market. The consolidation has just meant that it's not so personal. And there's a real opportunity for stations who are staying local, I think. If they really do work at it, they can win in that case. I think the people who've been in it for 40 years just see a situation where every big city and every probably quite big town had its radio station that felt like it was in the place and was part of the community, and it was able to sustain a staff of 10 or 20 people, maybe more, and it was, in many cases, most cases, a profitable business. And since consolidation has moved the cash elsewhere, but it's also moved the programming elsewhere. So it feels really odd if you came from there. But, you know, I think that the question is, do the listeners care? And I think the jury's out on that because, you know, it is true that with particularly Global's networking, they have made the standard of most of the daytime that is network go rocketing up, you know, and time will tell whether that, in the end, will beat the localness of the stations that stay in the market.
You're a businessman. If somebody said to you, here's a licence for a local radio station in, I don't know, Manchester or Leeds or some big town, and you can do anything you like, would you think you could make money out of that?
I think it's going to be tough to compete on sales. I would think that we could come up with a programming offering. The question is, could you come up with a sales offering for only one radio station? Because the national sales, unless you're aggregated into a national sales house, not getting those is a really big problem. You've got to sell it in London to the agencies, or at least to the big regional agencies. So I don't think it's a no-brainer anymore. You know, though that era was era like Beat 106 in central Scotland, where there was quite clear, which is now Capital, it was Galaxy, and but where, you know, that you could quite see that market, central Scotland, brilliant opportunity, come in with something for the kids, and they did quite well.
Phil, what's your perspective on that?
I think you need scale, as Mark said. I think fragmentation of commercial radio hasn't helped with this at all. Just again, to state the obvious, I remember when there were three, I think, commercial radio stations in London. It didn't feel like a long time ago. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to work out that if the advertising pot has been divided by a lot more than that, actually getting the funding to allow a station to be completely unique, not to voice track, not to do the networking that's necessary, is going to be tough. But I remain optimistic. I mean, you've got to be optimistic. I think there are still lots of opportunities which haven't yet been tapped, some of which will emerge, I think, over the next 2 or 3 years, some of which we're considering very directly as a company, actually.
I'll be coming to both of you to ask you what you've been listening to. But Mark, while we've got you here, while we're in fact in your home here at Wise Buddha, tell us about this new radio station you're launching that's devoted to musicals.
We will launch this if it gets funded. Simon Willis, who is our head of content came up with the idea with a couple of other people, including Rebecca Coates, of serving the audience, of which we don't just mean the people who will occasionally buy a ticket, but the people who love the music of the musicals, because it isn't very well served. There's already one online radio station, and there's 2 hours of Elaine Page every week, and the odd other thing on radio too. But otherwise, there's this, you know, many millions of people who enjoy that music who can't find a place for it. And so what Simon has devised is an Indiegogo crowdfunded platform to build a radio station which will become a portal. And if you look around, also if you look around musical theatre, there's a huge array of websites that will sell you tickets, but there's nothing amazing out there for musical theatre. There's basically a bunch of ticket sites. There's nowhere that properly does it and aggregates all this stuff. And I think that the idea is a good idea. And what's interesting about it for me, and why it's a no-brainer for me, is if the audience want it, i.e. they support it on Indiegogo and crowdfund it, we'll do it. And if
they
don't...
So this is subscription radio?
Well, effectively, what we're saying is, if you believe that this is a service you'd like to listen to for some of the time, or if you like the idea of it and you want to donate anything from £5 up to, if you love it and you want to be one of our launch sponsors, anything from £5 to £5,000, if we make the target of around £145,000, which we'll run it for a year plus, then we'll do it for you. And if we don't make the target because there isn't enough interest, we won't do it. It's a, you know, but we believe that the service will attract an audience if we can get it there.
Can you see audiences migrating online to find niche services, which almost by definition broadcast services never will be?
I think there's a possibility of that, but I also think any service like this, a niche service, will survive only on people who absolutely are diehard. I think you've got to market it such that the people who would quite like Heart for a while, or maybe would like, you know, listen to Ken Bruce, would also maybe at a certain time quite like to go and get an hour of this because it's music they love. And I think there is the evidence, there's quite a lot of evidence that people will trial it. But I take the example of Classic FM. There aren't 6 million diehard classical music fans. There are probably 2 or 3 million, and then there's the rest who quite like it, and they listen for enough hours a week for them to get a great cume and make some great money on it. So that's the theory. We'll be proven right or wrong. And
I wish you every success. Now, I think a lot of people will, actually.
Stage door on Indiegogo.
Well, if you make that work, I think there'll be quite a few niche ideas knocking around in that area. Let's find out what our guests have been listening to. Pick a couple of things, Phil, that you've enjoyed recently.
Lots of different things. I mean, where music's concerned, I listen to Giles on Six Music. I tend to have Six Music on at home. Mentioning one of our own Funk and Soul show, I just love the music on that show on Saturdays, and obviously it follows on from Giles. Looking forward to Glastonbury, particularly on Radio 2. I think that's going to be a great weekend. I think they'll do that really well. Going back to something I mentioned earlier, Between the Ears. I mean, if just for somebody who is interested in sitting in front of edit desks and spending hours making noise, then Between the Ears is a fantastic strand. Radio 4, last one of Tales from the Stave, I think, this weekend. Looking at Porgy and Bess. So, again, it's nice to hear a different treatment to music. I tend to have 4 in the car. So I tend to get my news fixes, whether that's What the Papers Say, Westminster Hour, Today, things like that. Comedy, I still love The Now Show. John Holmes, I think, is fantastic. We've got Wimbledon on in the office, or we had Wimbledon in the office this morning. So it's broad. And then, obviously, in commercial radio terms, we supply Absolute. I'm a particular fan of the music they play, so we'll have Absolute on as well. It's broad. It's broad.
Just before we go to Mark, what do you think is a supplier of Absolute? What do you think is going to happen to them? Do you think they're going to become Planet Rock?
I hope they'll continue to be a radio station that grows in the spirit that they've grown to today, which is being a bit different, putting some personality into their station, backing some really interesting different ideas, standing for live music, standing for a great music plot, and supporting good on-air talent. I genuinely hope. I have no idea what's going to happen to Absolute Radio, but I really hope that that's what continues. I mean, Clive Dickens did some fantastic work on that station before he went to Australia to do some fantastic work, no doubt, in Australia. And I think the spirit of what he started should continue.
Mark, I'll have to ask you. You're very well connected.
I don't know the answer to that question. I have asked a few people. the hottest rumour is that Barrow are going to grab it, and they probably can afford to, and Global have got enough to think about. And maybe they won't have to worry about things anymore by the time this is available online.
Let us see.
You know, that's the sort of landscape, isn't it? Really, Absolute, I think, is a great station and a bunch of great services. They just need to be in a company where there's a sales machine working and there's an infrastructure that can cut some of the costs out, so they can still make some of those services.
And what you've been listening to, Mark?
I'm liking John Holmes on XFM, and the audience is too, because the numbers have gone shooting up. I'm pretty much a Today programme listener in the morning. I do wake up early and hear a bit of Wake Up to Money on Five Live, and then hear Today programme for about an hour before I get moving. And then still think Chris is doing a very big, impressive job of 9.8 million at breakfast on Radio 2. And his energy and drive is, I think, is extraordinary, really. In our day, we were told don't put too much in the show, and he kind of does the opposite. He just puts absolutely everything in, but somehow manages to deliver it in a way that people can still digest, which is a real achievement.
Didn't they always do this? All the great broadcasters have always been the people who broke all those rules.
Yeah, and he was, and the same with Moyles. I think Zoe sitting in for Chris is a really smart move on Radio 2. I think that will work and play well. And I'm liking Grimmie, I think, on Radio 1.
It's a bit young for us, isn't it?
It's really young for us. But what I think, as broadcast professionals, I think we can hear the warmth, and I think we can hear the approach to that target. I think that's going to yield for them in the end.
And as far as the public service, the BBC supply, I think what's nice is there is now a really clear differentiation between what Grimmie and Chris does. I'd back up what you said about Chris. I think he's an amazing broadcaster, and right the way through his career, I think he's managed to do brilliant things. But I think you now have two distinct propositions. You have something that my son would want to listen to on Radio 1, and that probably I'd want to listen to on Radio 2. So that's what the Beeb should be doing, and they seem to be getting that right at the moment.
Phil Critchlow, Mark Goodyear, thank you very much for joining us on the Radio Today programme. Thanks to G, who was engineering through the glass. Thanks to Jamie Taylor, who will have produced this by the time you hear it. It's been a TDC production. It's been recorded at Wiseburger. It's been the Radio Today programme. And next week, I think we'll be at the Arkivas. See you then.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.